Are you with Truth News Radio Australia? It's the 25th of November 2009, and my name's Hereward Fenton, and we're doing a special show tonight in honour of the breakthrough news article published in the Sydney Morning Herald this morning. Two articles, in fact, covering the interview with Jan Utzon, and another article with a huge amount of misinformation in it, covering the collapse of Building 7. This is a really, really important event, and I just want to run this show tonight so that we can recap on some of the facts that have come up as a result of these articles. And I'd like to welcome to the show tonight Miklos. Miklos is actually a friend, and has known Jan Utzon for quite some time, being the owner of a hotel where Jan Utzon was often residing while in Australia. And this is actually mentioned in the article that was published in the Sydney Morning Herald this morning. So I thought we'd get Miklos on, and I've got my esteemed friend Dan Collins on the show tonight as well to discuss and basically analyse these questions, these important questions. So so let's, without further ado, just get straight into the show. Okay. Miklos, I was wondering if you could possibly begin by giving a bit of a background as to how you initially broached these questions about 9/11 with Mr. Utzon.
Yeah, no worries. Well, basically, he was staying at the place where I work, and obviously, I know he's a professional architect, and I was looking at this material on Richard Gage's site, 9/11 Architects, and obviously other sites as well. And after I got to know him a bit better, we had a few conversations, I sort of brought it up and I said, look, you're a professional architect, what do you think about these sort of all this information? He said, well, I haven't really looked at it, but it's interesting, you know. I said, well, I'm, you know, interested in what your opinion is as an architect, you know. Would you have a look at this if you get time, you know? And so he went away and had a look. I think I gave him Blueprint for Truth and a couple of other things, and yeah, he came back and he thought there was definitely some questions raised there.
Right, yeah. And so how long did that process sort of take for you, when, like, from when you initially broached it with him to when he started to, you know, basically think about it? And was it like a few days, or was it longer than that?
I'm not really sure. Actually, at first I wasn't sure what his sort of reaction would be, you know. But I thought that from my sort of layperson point of view, the evidence was extremely strong. And I thought there's got to be something in it. But, you know, you never know. Maybe there's some angle that you don't see, or that is a professional. So that's sort of why I approached him on that. And, yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, I can't really remember. I sort of just left it with him, and he was in and out of the country, and he doesn't always stay here. He was sometimes has to stay in other places in Sydney as well because of work reasons. Yeah, and then I sort of said, oh, he came back one time, and I said, what do you think? And he said, yeah, you know, definitely some questions there. And I was sort of surprised when he signed the petition. I saw that there, and I thought that was really great, because you know, I've researched the evidence quite a bit, like a lot of people who've looked into this do. It sort of makes you realise that you've got to take it upon yourself to discover the facts, because you're not going to get it from the media. And yeah, so I was really happy that he signed up for that, and I thought, well, that was a pretty strong endorsement.
Yeah, look, it was. And the interview, which we did during the 9/11 Hard Evidence Conference, was totally unplanned, and it was just very lucky that Jan was there on the same day that Richard Gage was there, and that we were able to get Jan at a point where he wasn't too busy. And we just filmed it because, you know, we had to get a camera, so we got a camera really quick. And yeah. we went down there and we filmed it. And I really think that what we did there is now going to set off a chain of events which we can't predict. It's like, this is an amazing thing about this whole field and this movement, is that because it's so volatile, because the information is so explosive, when you introduce a new person into the mix that has a little bit of influence, it creates all these unexpected effects. You know, it's basically just what we come up against, what we start to see, is how the control structures seem to be very much based on these questions never raising above a certain threshold level. And that threshold level is kept down by, basically, it appears that virtually everyone that's in a position of influence within our society is somehow gagged, you know, is under control by the power structure. And it's extraordinary as you start to look into these questions, and you see how rare it is that someone steps forward. But then you see often what happens to people when they do step forward, and how difficult it can be for them, for the ones that are already established. Mm. You know, we've seen prominent academics like Stephen Jones, physicist from Brigham Young University, forced to take early retirement. We saw Kevin Ryan sacked from his job. We've seen quite a few other cases where people have been basically hounded out of their jobs, like Rosie O'Donnell, TV presenter in the United States. She simply brought up a few questions about Building 7, and she was gone within a couple of months, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, for people who are already successful and famous, you know, it's maybe not so bad because they've still got their money, and apparently Rosie O'Donnell didn't do too badly. She actually got a pretty good payout from the television company she was working for. And, you know, of course, Stephen Jones would have got his retirement or whatever. But with people who are, you know, say in mid-career, if you're in mid-career, you know, what's going to happen to you if you step up about this? How are you going to make a living? Let's say you're in the media, or let's say you're even a well-known person in entertainment, and you step forward about this, you may well find that your career as you know it ends at that point. And I don't think it's an issue for Jan Utzon, because I think he's already beyond the point where that would matter. He's so well established. And what I've seen in terms of the way the media has dealt with this information that he's brought forward is that they're very reluctant to actually attack him directly.
Yeah, well, they've sort of tried to do it in a kind of roundabout way by sort of saying, oh, look, it's associated with all this sort of thing, and, you know, conspiracy theory, all the language used through it, and there's heaps of deception in the article, and lots of completely incorrect facts, total lies, basically. But you're right, they're not coming out and attacking him directly, just sort of trying to brand the whole thing as dodgy and then say he signed up for it, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely not positive. I think we sort of conditioned to expecting so much worse, but it's still not really positive, you know? It's more trash from the trash.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual article. On page 9 of the Sydney Morning Herald today, the main article's title is Utzon's Son Signs Up for September 11 Conspiracy Theory. Mm. Now, of course, they always use this term conspiracy theory, and we've analysed it so much on this show. you know, it gets tedious, basically. But we have to continually break it down for listeners to understand that when they use this theme, this meme, call it what you will, you know, this terminology of calling people who are looking for truth and justice and are calling out lies and deception, when they call that conspiracy theory, that is a way of discrediting it. Because really, what we have here is people who are standing up and asking questions, and, you know, they're brave, brave souls, and yet it's spun in this way to make it look as if, you know, and the term conspiracy theory goes with a certain kind of, it's just a way of looking down at someone. And, you know, quite often I find in my work and surrounded by people who, you know, don't really understand anything that I talk about, they kind of have a giggling approach about it. You know, it's like they've got a schoolboy's or, you know, a childish approach, and that they kind of giggle over these conspiracy theories, as they call them, when in fact we're talking about, it's cognitive dissonance, really. I mean, I think people have a tendency to not want to face up to real injustice, like real horror, real threats to their world. And I think that it's easy for them not to face up to it when they can live in this kind of world of, you know, reasonably well-off people in Australia who don't feel directly threatened. But I do think that their mindset would change if they were themselves come face to face with the actual horrors. And that what I've found is that a lot of people from New York don't have this approach. Apparently many people in New York who really witnessed the horrors of what happened on September 11 don't have this kind of giggling approach, this kind of snickering approach to conspiracy theories. You know, they realize that there was a crime, massive crime, and that, you know, It wasn't even just the collapse of the towers. It was the way the government dealt with the aftermath of that event, and basically sent everyone back into the collapse zone, and reopened Wall Street, basically condemning thousands more to die of lung disorders and you know, cancer. So this is a really serious, really grave situation, and of course, you know, we look at it and we look at what then happened in the wake of these events, and the horrendous suffering that was inflicted on people in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you know, ongoing 8 years later. And look, all I know, Miklos, is that people who read this article today, regardless of the fact that it is obviously biased and trying to discredit the theories, it has enough information in it that will make many, many people become aware that there is a problem here. And even the photograph itself, we see this this rubble pile of Building 7 just neatly folded in on itself. I'm just looking at it here in the newspaper, and it's just a perfectly contained pile that only looks about one or two stories high, and it was a 47-story building. I mean, people will look at this, and it will have a very strong effect. And I do expect that we'll see more in the media on this topic. And we may well see the some of the other newspapers picking it up in the wake of this. We may see television picking it up. You know, I do expect something, because this is the first time this story has really been treated as a proper news story. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're right. There is definitely a positive side to it. I mean, anything that brings it out, and, you know, the bottom line is that there's two educated professionals there who are questioning it, and then you've got this journalists here who basically, if you've got half a brain cell, you can see that they've done basically no actual fact-checking, and there's totally incorrect factual points in the article as well. So no matter what sort of spin they've put on the article, the bottom line is that a half-discerning person can go, well, these guys look pretty straightforward. They look like, you know, pretty honest people. They're working professional architects, and all they're saying is, hey, we've looked at this. We originally thought it was cut and dry as it was sold to us, as Richard Gage says in the interview as well. And but now we've had a look at some of this evidence that we would like everyone else to look at, and at the very least, there are some big questions.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I'll just bring Dan in on this question. What's your take on the overall effect that this article, these two articles, will have, Dan, on future kind of awareness of the whole 9/11 questions?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Good day, Miklos.
Good day.
The second article on just repeats the same old stuff about the NIST report. It actually mentions Building 7, which is quite a surprise, and it talks about the NIST report. There's a few snide remarks about, you know, just, the really scary part. There's one phrase, I don't know, I'm not sure about that, whether that's meant to be a dig at conspiracy theorists or just something. I don't know. Some people, conspiracy theorist, I think the word has overtones of just somebody who's mentally ill, you know, like, or somebody who's just a rabble-rousing, you know, a social rabble-rouser, or just someone who's a bit mentally ill or got nothing better to do, or, you know, except sit around, you know, wondering about these questions.
Well, look, I think that my take on it is that what we've done here is actually really, really significant. And I think we need to actually remind ourselves that what we've done is we have become the new media. And, you know, as much as I, you know, acknowledge that the unsympathetic and unhelpful kind of approach that you see with this sort of journalism is unfortunate, we are the ones that took the initiative. We did the interview with Jan Utzon. They have basically followed on that, and they've even used our own video. I don't know if you know that, Mickey, but they've actually put our video up on the Sydney Morning Herald website.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the tables have turned.
Yeah, you know, well, they're not doing their job, are they? They're just sort of slaving for the master, whatever that may be. But they're not actually working as journalists anymore. They're doing something else, and it probably needs a new job description.
Yeah, and you know, we are leading, you know, and if they don't catch up, and if they don't, you know, buckle up, they will be wiped out, because the people, the society, needs good media, right? It's an important function. It's as important as water and, you know, and electricity.
Democracy depends on the free flow of information, you know.
Yeah,
that's rule number one.
And so what we're doing here on Truth News, like so many other small, you know, blog sites and alternative news sites all over the world, is we're picking up where these giants basically are basically completely failing. And I think we'll see a changeover. We'll see that this old guard will shrink, and because society will continue, humanity will continue, truth will continue. That, you know, lies and deception and backward regressive thinking and corrupt systems will be wiped out. I'm absolutely certain about this. But it will happen because we have people who are passionate, because we have people who don't just accept peer group pressure as the defining way in which to make decisions about your life. We have enough people, and it's only a tiny, tiny percentage, but, you know, there's enough there, and we will carry the rest through. And, you know, the longer-term project of humanity is that more and more people start to wake up to what it means to be a true individual, a true, you know, true human being, to actually realize the human potential. Because so many people are just not awake, you know, they're just not living anywhere near what they could be. And they're living in this fantasy world of things that are given to them through a false system of advertising and economics to make them want things that they've been hypnotized to believe that they need. And, you know, what I believe, and I'm really, you know, just tonight just want to share that with our listeners, is that what I believe is that what really is important is truth. And like the truth of who you are, the truth of how you feel, the truth of love, the truth of you know, realities about human life and the freedom to be able to think and to see that 2 + 2 always makes 4, you know, like it doesn't sometimes make 5 when somebody says so. Like the incredible, just it's exquisite when you actually know that you, just one person, can know things and really know them. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree, and I really hope you're right. I hope that's exactly what happens. I hope they go the way of the dodo. But I think what's happened is that, you know, that whenever you have a power structure that's, you know, or a gathering of power, like a media organization or a network of media organizations that are networked into larger media organizations, you've basically got a power center there and a power structure, and, you know, criminals always gravitate, you know. Psychopaths always gravitate to those kinds of situations because, and the most clever ones will, you know, make their way up the ladder there. That's the way that it's always gone, you know.
Absolutely.
That's the problem with the thing. So, you know, decentralization of power and control and distribution of information is exactly what the world needs. And then within that, you're going to have the reverse happening, which is the way it really should be, where those rising to the top are going to be the most honest, the most correct, the ones who do the best journalism, who find the most accurate facts and are the most reliable, trustworthy individuals, and they're going to become reputable by virtue of their actions, not because they're called the Sydney Morning Herald or any other paper, which is really just a bit of print and a fancy font on a piece of paper. And it only means as much as what it's carrying. And what it's carrying is basically nothing at the moment. And that's the problem. And people still just are enamored and hypnotized, as you say, by this by the corporate logo. And that's all it is, you know. Like, it's like, you know, Coca-Cola killing Mexican workers. You know, all people see is Coca-Cola and the logo there. And, you know, they drink it and they don't think. If you think for 2 seconds, you know, you connect 1 + 2 and you get the result, and it's right in front of you. But you've got to think for 2 seconds. You've got to actually use your own mind. And if you, you know, push away your responsibility to someone else to think for you and to provide the facts, and you do that on a global scale, on a massive scale, this is the result you get. You get the mainstream media that we have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just going to take a really short break here, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, I'm here tonight on Truth News talking about the article today that was printed in the Sydney Morning Herald. And I'm just going to read a few selective quotes here and might just sort of analyze this a little bit. The article starts off with the term conspiracy theory, as we've seen. It's in the title, and it's also repeated in the first paragraph. As conspiracy theories go, it is up there with the CIA assassination of President John Kennedy and the faked moon landings. The terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001 have spawned a cottage industry devoted to questioning whether they were the work of Al-Qaeda and hinting that it was an inside job. Now, look, it's really interesting that, they led there with a comparison to Kennedy and the moon landings. Because, of course, like a lot of people have questions about the moon landings. And, you know, I've got questions about the moon landings. I must really be a nut. If it's like you read that, right? And if you've ever had a secret question or thought about the moon landings, or even if you just know someone who does, right? You read that, and it's clever. It's psychological warfare. I don't know where the hell they got it from, but basically, what it does is it makes people cringe inside, and think, oh my God. If I believe this, I could believe that. And if I believe that, I'm completely cuckoo.
Yeah, and you think Elvis is still alive and all that, and, you know, E.T. was real.
Yeah. And maybe you believe in the Tooth Fairy, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the questions about the Apollo moon landings are quite sensible. I mean, I basically didn't get into this for years. I wasn't interested in it, but I basically... took an interest earlier this year when I saw NASA, when I heard the news reports about NASA kind of trumpeting that they'd sent back these amazing photographs from the moon that showed the Apollo moon landing sites. And I thought, great, you know, I'll go and have a look. So I went to the NASA site, and what did I see? I saw this this really crappy image, right, that had some little dots on it that were just like pixels, a few pixels, right? And this is from the latest technology, really high-tech stuff, you know, the latest satellites. And the news story on the radio was crisp images showing you the footprints of the astronauts. That's what they actually said on the BBC. And yet I went to the NASA site and all I saw was some just totally ridiculous thing with a few pixels on it. And I kept going back because they were saying, oh, there's going to be better quality images coming soon. Well, it's 6 months later now. That was back in June. There haven't, as far as I know, there haven't been any better quality images. Now, if I'm wrong about that, you know, somebody please correct me and send me those images, because I don't want to believe that NASA, that the Apollo landings were a hoax. You know, and that's not even what I'm talking about here tonight. But since they've led with their story with that, you know, nasty, snide comparison, I'm afraid I've got to really slap it back by saying, you know, someone who has some questions or doubts about the Apollo moon landings is just sensible, as far as I can see. You'd be an idiot. You'd be a moron to not have some questions about it. And unfortunately, you know, I hate to say it, but that is really the state of mind of a lot of people. They're just morons. And they've been made that way. You know, I mean, I'm not against people. I'm not saying that that they're bad. I'm just saying that they've been dumbed down, and they. You know, like, you really need to just apply a little bit of thought to this, a little bit of thought to certain questions. And the same goes to the Kennedy assassination. I mean, that was the second comparison they made there. And, of course, I mean, why is it so ridiculous? I mean, just forgetting about the CIA, of course, the Kennedy theory, the Kennedy questions don't all say the CIA did it. That's a complete misrepresentation. The Kennedy questions look at whether there was a second shooter on the grassy knoll, primarily. That's the most important single question that's been addressed by all of the people that have researched the Kennedy assassination. Now, why is it so ridiculous that there might have been a second shooter on the grassy knoll? Why is that an insane, wild, lunatic assertion that there might have been two shooters? I mean, all we know with the Kennedy assassination, for certain, is that the government, i.e. the government that replaced Kennedy, wanted to have one person, one scapegoat, one lone killer that they could pin the whole thing on and then wipe the story clean, because that one guy then gets shot in public view on television, and then case closed, story over. And, you know, the motive is so clear for why they didn't want to have a second shooter, right? And then all the other questions of whether who was involved and the CIA might have been involved and all these different people might have been involved, they're just questions. But this representation of people asking a question about a serious crime as being just some kooky, crazy thing is something we have to fight against relentlessly. And that's why I'm doing this show tonight, to show that I fight back every case, every time. Every time I take a punch, I get back up and I give a punch back. Because many people just give up in the face of propaganda. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Well, it's just so mindless, you know. It is so mindless that it does test your patience, you know. Because it's so idiotic, it's so brainless. I mean, you know, just for example, you know, there's a section here where it says that in the fire, not a government plot, fell Third Tower article. You know, there's one bit where he talks about that for explosives to have to be there, the Institute concludes that the smallest blast capable of crippling the Third Tower's critical column would have produced a sound level of 130 to 140 decibels at a distance of half a mile. No witness reported it, full stop. That's a total lie. Anyone can get onto YouTube and any of these good 9/11 sites that have got lots of great facts and evidence there, and there's heaps and heaps of testimony and video and eyewitness reports of massive explosive sounds. So that's totally untrue. No witness reported it. Lots of witnesses reported it.
Look, what we also know is that they were demolishing the building gradually during the day. There were lots of explosions. They weren't necessarily like what you see when a building is blown up in Las Vegas, because the way these buildings were done, it was done by stealth. So there were many explosions, and they were weakening the buildings during the day, throughout the day. In the Twin Towers, there were many explosions going off even before the plane hit. And the same with Building 7. We know from the testimony of Barry Jennings that there were explosions in the building in the morning. The building didn't go down till late in the afternoon. So, you know, and the other point, really important point to make, is that with the scientific research that's been done by Niels Harrit and Stephen Jones, they have found traces of nanothermite. And when nanothermite is used as an explosive, it does not produce the same level of concussive detonation as what you get with C4 or RDX. It's a different type of explosive, and it has been developed for these very specific reasons in a military context. So, you know, you've got to look at the real research, you've got to look at the real evidence, and you've got to look at all the evidence. Anyway, please continue, Miklos.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was just one sort of glaring issue there. And then there's, you know, a mistake on the time it took to fall. There's also I don't have it in front of me right now, but there's a mention in there. He talks about the fires in Building 7 were some kind of language like uncontrolled fires or, you know, something of that. Yeah, these uncontrolled fires caused thermal expansion of steel beams on lower floors, damaging floor framing on multiple floors. So uncontrolled fires, that's not consistent at all with eyewitness accounts of what was there. They were scattered office fires. It's on the videos. I mean, you would think that it was an absolute blazing inferno that was just, you know, absolutely unstoppable. The word uncontrolled, it's just, you know, paints this completely different picture. It's a completely dishonest representation of the facts, or the journalist hasn't checked the information at all, because you can get on the internet and find tons of video and eyewitness accounts, video witness accounts of what the fires were like in the building, and they were scattered fires. They were scattered office fires. This uncontrolled language is just absolutely misleading and dishonest. And they don't mention things like that 60% of the writers of this holy Bible NIST report, which they rest on as though it is some godly tome that can't be refuted, 60% of the commissioners who wrote that report and put their names to it say that, you know, from different language that they use, but they basically all contend that it's definitely falls short of of the facts, that there was a lot of stuff that was missed out. They were hindered and interfered with by different agencies. One of them resigned, saying it's a national scandal. He said the investigation is compromised. One of these days we'll have to get the full story because the 9/11 issue is so important, but this White House wants to cover it up. And, I mean, this is one of the guys who was, hired as the commissioner for this report, and he's resigned in disgust, presumably, and says it's a national scandal, you know. But here they are in the Sydney Morning Herald, you know, resting comfortably in their journalistic integrity on this this book as though it's some kind of definitive fact gospel on the events of the day, and the people that actually contributed to it and put their names to it say otherwise, 60% of them. So, you know, man, it's just really, really shameful. There's not much fact-checking that needs to be done on part of these journalists to quickly realise that there's some very, very big discrepancies between the evidence that exists, that is in the public record, in the public domain, that is abundant and has multiple verifications from eyewitnesses, video, the whole lot, and what is in that NIST report that is not worth the paper that it's printed on. And I want to know as well if the journalist who's quoting this book and saying that Mr. Oudson has not read the report, whether he's read it and whether he's read all the revisions and whether he's gone through that report as any journalist with any integrity should, and check the facts himself to say, well, look, is this report honest? Is this report genuine? Does it report the actual findings? Or as a journalist, can I uncover a scandal here and make a name for myself and print the real information? You know, there's none of that these days anymore. It's just, it was handed down. It's a holy tome. We shall rest on it forevermore. And we no longer think. And that's it. We're all getting frontal lobotomies, and that's the way it's going to be.
Absolutely. You know? And listeners, please understand, this is a time to redouble your efforts. You've got to redouble your efforts. You've got to refocus. This has to be met. This news story surfacing in mainstream and a mainstream broadsheet indicates that things are moving, right? But of course, they're trying to push it back. They're trying to suppress it. So you've got to realize that this is really serious. That this is reality. This is not a game. This is not a drill. This is not like a movie script. This is real life, and we have to actually embrace the situation and move it forwards. And there are many, many things that anyone listening to this show can do, and I encourage you to write to these journalists. We have Sean Nichols. And we have Rick Fenley, who've each written an article, which was published in the Sydney Morning Herald. Now, I've noticed on the Sydney Morning Herald website that they're closed for comments. Now, that's an outrage. On a story as important and topical as this, those articles should be open for comments.
You know why, man? Because it'll be just overwhelmed with commentary that they don't want there. And you just have to look at that 101.7 poll. I don't know what it ended up being, but when I checked it, it was 90-95% of people said there's something more to this after the Richard Gage's interview.
Yes, yeah, the WSFM interview with Richard Gage, which had a poll there, 95%. And the other point is, of course, people have a lot to say on this topic. So if there was an opportunity to leave a comment, you'd be getting thousands of comments, I do believe. Within a few days, it would run into the thousands. It would actually overwhelm them, and they know that. They actually know that from what happened when I published an article on Unleashed a year and a half ago, and they actually had to shut it down because they realized it was just going to go bigger and bigger and bigger, because suddenly they'd provided an outlet for a lot of repressed thoughts and feelings from millions of people. And so we have all these people in our society who want to speak out, who feel strongly about it. But what I still detect, Miklos, is that a lot of people even though they feel strongly, still hold back. They still suffer from this peer pressure or, you know, some level of cognitive dissonance that actually prevents them from actually doing anything. You know, we have some people who can participate in, say, forum discussions, but they'll never go out. They'll never actually take it one step further. We have a lot of people who just think about these issues, but won't ever do anything. Won't ever even take one step. Now, if everyone only ever just took one step, you know, if everyone who had the thoughts just took that one step, we could end this really quickly. And if every prominent person who has, you know, knowledge and a conscience did what Jan Utzon did, we could end this as well. And Jan didn't even make a very strong statement. You know, he didn't say, look, I'm a 9/11 truth activist and, you know, I absolutely know for certain these things happened. He's basically, you know, cautious. He's taking a cautious, you know, precautionary principle role there. But he's willing to say that it looks like it needs to be reinvestigated. He's willing to look at Building 7 and just make the immediate, you know, intuitive statement that everyone makes when they see the building come down, that it looks like a controlled demolition. Now, that doesn't prove it, but he said it, right? And the fact is, most people who are in positions of influence and power won't even do that. They won't even just go and look at the YouTube video and just watch it and go, my God, that does look like a controlled demolition. I mean, the most basic, simple first step. So we've got to get these people to take that first step. We have to be the media and, you know, I just urge our listeners to get out there and contact the Sydney Morning Herald, contact these journalists, contact other media outlets, contact your local representatives and speak to people you know, speak to people at work, just relentlessly, and remember that the propaganda that is keeping this suppressed has to be met with an equal effort and intention from the people who are awake in the other direction. We can't just sort of say something once and then you know, maybe, you know, go to one protest and then just think, okay, well, I did my bit and forget about it. You know what I mean? You can't, it's not going to work. Or you can't just sort of say something once and then think that that's going to do something, because the propaganda from the other side is relentless and continuous and over and over and over again. So we actually have to really toughen up, and we've got to be more resilient. We've got to have more stamina, and we've got to just be prepared to continually tell the truth over and over again, no matter how monotonous it gets.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting as well, you know, like we're always sold on the idea that the media's main interest is in sensationalizing things and getting readers and getting viewers and selling advertising and, you know, basically that sort of an angle. But this whole behavior around this and probably other issues as well sort of flies in the face of that notion that the media is only interested in getting readers and this sort of thing, because, you know, they're clearly suppressing all this stuff and they don't want to talk about it. They are avoiding it. So it really makes you have to ask, well, if there's something more important than selling newspapers and selling advertising and getting views on the on TV or whatever, then what is it that's more important? And that's a good question, I think, because it's really very revealing. You know, it sort of suggests that there's something more important to them than just selling newspapers. Because, you know, let's face it, if they put out the facts in a major publication like the Sydney Morning Herald, like, for example, something which I think is a really good compendium of links and to evidence and websites is the 20 Minutes with the President bibliography. That's on prisonplanet.com.
And yeah, that's quite valuable.
It's just a great, because you can go through that list and, you know, it links you to the FBI Most Wanted Fugitives page, and you find that it's true. Bin Laden is not listed for 9/11. And then you go to number two and you go on down the list. And if they were to just go through and list these concrete facts, no theories, just concrete facts that are, you know, just in your face, alarming and obvious, I think they'd sell a lot of papers. And if they opened up debate on this sort of thing, they'd sell a lot of papers. They'd you know, make a name for themselves. And which, when the facts check out, which they would, they'll also get a lot of credibility. We were the ones to stand up for the truth. We were the ones to do this first. We did it in the face of a global suppression. So their interest isn't in selling papers as much as I think they would like us to think. And at the end of the day, the journalist works for an editor, the editor works for a board, the board works for the owner, and we all know that the global media's got a very centralized ownership.
Indeed. I mean, look, they make their money from the fact that they have a monopoly.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, it doesn't really matter when you've got a monopoly. You can put anything on the news. You can put anything on the television because you control it. There's no competition. So the idea that the media are driven by trying to get their ratings up as if there's some fierce competition. No, they can get their ratings up whenever they need to. You know, it's like it's kind of false, really. It's a false paradigm. I mean, they are concerned about their ratings, of course.
Well, we're sold on false controversies all the time. There's a facade of these controversies existing, and some of them are real and they'll capitalize on them, but they're really irrelevant. Like, you know, oh, I don't know what it might be, the sort of issue of the day that doesn't really affect everybody, but it's a controversy in its own right. But when you look at something like the 9/11 issue, that's a massive controversy, and it's got controversies within controversies, and it's surrounded by all these controversies, and it's everywhere. I mean, you could do weeks of interesting exposés just on Giuliani, you know, the mayor of New York at the time.
Indeed.
And all the very dodgy stuff going on around him. And you could do, you know, weeks of stuff on Bush, and you can do stuff on NORAD. And it's just like there's so much controversy here, and it's all real, you know, and they don't want to touch it, but they want to give you all these false controversies, you know, Paris Hilton and whatever the rubbishes of the day, Britney Spears and all that. And so, yeah, there's this notion that there are all these controversies that they are reporting on, but it's just become totally false.
They create fake ones, and they create false ones, just like they create fake television shows or even fake reality shows. You know,
they call it reality, and it's not.
Yeah, they call it a reality show, and it's all fake.
Yeah.
You know,
which is really, you know, it's double think or double speak. You know, that's just another of the many examples that exist in the media.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they control the spectrum of what you can watch on television anyway. Mm. So, you know, sooner or later, the people who watch television just have to accept that they've only got this number of choices, and so the game of like getting people's attention or getting ratings up is just totally fixed. You know, the race is fixed. You can't people can't compete, except in the realm of the internet, which we still, you know, have this ability now to compete, and we just can keep exploiting it. And you know, with the increases in technology, with the increases in reach that we've got through broadband technologies, you know, even this show that I'm doing here, I think within a few more years, we'd be able to do this as a streaming live video show, and you know, even at a fraction of the cost of what it used to be. And that's actually what scares them the most. And that's actually why they're trying to bring in all kinds of draconian new systems to restrict free technology and the free internet. And I don't know if you've heard about this, Miklos, but News Corporation has recently announced that they're going to privatize all of their content. And Rupert Murdoch actually announced that he was planning to basically go to war with Google, because Google, he doesn't want Google crawling or indexing his sites anymore. And they've actually done a deal with Microsoft, and it seems like a deal made in hell. Microsoft has actually agreed to pay News Corp for the privilege of stripping News Corp from Google search engine. I see this as madness, actually. I actually see where they're heading with that as just really going to putting nails in the coffins. Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. Yeah, look, it's really worrisome that, you know, Obama's got the, well, theoretically anyway, he's got the internet on a kill switch, you know.
Well, yeah, and we've got similar plans here from the Rudd government, and even prominent members of the Greens are actually behind that plan as well. So we'll keep fighting against it. Look, I think we're gonna wrap up the show tonight. We just really wanted to do this piece on the Sydney Morning Herald and make sure that everyone realises how important it is, and you know, make sure you get a copy of the newspaper as well while it's still in shops this week if you haven't got a copy. You know, it's really important to have the hard copy as well, and you know, take a photo of it. You know, take a photo of it and put it up on your blog page or whatever, and just keep the fight up.
Yep.
Well, look, thanks so much for coming on tonight, Miklos. I really appreciate that, and I am looking forward to talking to Jan again at some point. We'll probably wait till things have settled down a bit, and maybe we'll try and catch up with him again.
Yep, sure.
No worries.
Cool, man. No worries. Well, yeah, look, I just hope that people can have the sense to look at that these are two really normal, good-hearted people, Richard Gage and Jan Utzon. I know Jan, and I consider him a friend. I think he's a really great guy, really good-hearted, intelligent, good person. And if they can just see that two intelligent professionals have enough questions and enough serious concerns about the events of September 11 and the official report that was put out by the government to, in Richard Gage's case, travel around the world trying to bring the evidence to people that the media is not bringing to them, and in Jan's case, to see that evidence and to have enough questions to publicly state his opinion that there should be a new investigation. If they can see that that's got to amount for something, and it causes them to take a look at the evidence themselves at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which is just a fantastic site, among many others, and then it'll be a good article.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that.
No worries.
And, yeah, take care and good night.
No worries, you too.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, well, that about wraps up the show for tonight. We're going to go out with a 9/11 song here. It's a song titled Yet Another 9/11 Was an Inside Job Song. It's kind of cool, I like it.
When can people turn off the TV? What you think of this news is just a movie. This all going on, and poverty. While they're feeding you crap about celebrities, they simplify things to make you dumb. Their income tally stands closer to the sun. The last thing that they want is for their slave to think. That's why they're putting poison in your food and drink. They send us to silence, to never praised. Only the good guys are ever blown away. Give up all your rights and you'll be saved from the big bad little time lord in a cave. Islamic nuts don't snort cocaine. The wake of flights go dropouts have such good aim. Cheney must have been flying those planes. So P-TECH and MITRE and the FAA. The truth will set you free from global tyranny. Wake up American slums. 9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was an inside job. Two towers fall symmetrically. Injecting steel beams more than 500 feet. Tower 7 falls at free full speed. BBC. The perfect excuse to go to war, to gain power and control and kill millions more. Many other buildings have suffered worse, but none of them are turned into a cloud of dust. Explosions were heard throughout the day. Molten metal was seen flowing away. The power's still burning after months of rain. And what's it do with this explosive paint? Trains explode in major cities, destroyed by bombs made by the military. The whole suggests they were attached underneath. God save our racist Nazi queen. The truth will set you free from global tyranny. Wake up, American slums. 9/11 was an inside job. The truth will set you free from global tyranny. Wake up, American slums. 9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was an inside job. It sounds insane. And the chance you give your kids just damage their brains. The Nazis never died, they simply moved. And now they're at it again. It's easy to prove. The elite don't hide the fact that they're a bunch of crooks. Rockefeller brags about it in his books. They have a plan and it must fail, or they'll be taxing us every time we excel. And there'll be cameras in homes for them to spy on the slaves. Orwell's rolling in his grave. They're scaring us all into demanding this too, with terrorism, climate change and overhyped flu. The truth must come out, it's all up to you, before we're all forced onto internet too. The truth will set you free from global tyranny. Wake up, American slobs. 9/11 was an inside job. The truth will set you free from global tyranny. Wake up, American slums. 9/11 was an inside job. The truth will set you free. 9/11 was an inside job. The truth will set you free. 9/11 was an inside job. The truth will set you free from global tyranny. Wake up, American slums. 9/11 was an inside job. 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 9/11 was an inside job.